Morning. Today's daf in Echulin is Nun Tes. We are Nun Ches Amud Beis. We're at the Mishnah on the bottom of the Amud Achiza Saddam. We are now discussing other conditions of tarfus when it comes to an animal. The Mishnah starts off with Achiza Saddam. So the Gemara is describing some sort of congestive heart condition. Hamu Shenas, or let's say the animal is smoking. Gary Larson will get a big kick out of this Gemara. For those of you who understood the joke, that's great. For those of you who did not, we move right along. And hematsunenis, or if the animal is suffering some sort of chill. So these are obviously general medical conditions that the animal is suffering from. The vishachla hardufni, or let's say the animal ate some sort of very, very strong, herb or root, some translate as oleander, whatever the case is, v'shachla soas tarnagolim, or let's say the feces of a chicken, o shishasa mayim harayim, or if it drank literally bad water. Kshera, all these conditions, although it's not obviously not good for the animal to suffer, but these are all general conditions, and for these general conditions, the animal is not going to be made a trefa. One of the ideas that we've certainly gotten over the past, 2 weeks, now since we started the perek more than 2 weeks ago, is the idea that trefa is very specific. In other words, it has to be a real pathology that is specific and empirical. And for these general conditions, which obviously are going to be a detriment to the animal's general condition, health condition, nevertheless, it does not make an animal a trefa. Now, let's say the animal ate some either poison or was bitten by a snake and has venom running through it. So, muteris mishum trefa. Now, it's not treif, but at the same time, it's really not smart to eat it. Because now this animal, obviously, is going to be serving as a health risk to you. So it's not a trefa, but asura mishum sakanas nefashos. But yeah, but it's unwise, and we could say it even stronger. It's prohibited to eat it if it's going to actually be bad for your health. Meaning, if you know that it has either some sort of poison or venom coursing through its blood and its muscle, so obviously then you can't eat it because it's sakanas nefashos. So it's interesting. The Mishnah, the conclusion is of these last two scenarios that you can't eat it, but why can't you eat it? It's not because it's treif. It's simply because it's not good for your general condition. I'm a Shmuel. Last two. I'm a Shmuel. Okay, the Gemara continues. He'll eat a chiltis treifa. So if an animal were to eat a chiltis, now chiltis is a very, very spicy root, right? I guess we could describe it as some sort of hot pepper, but whatever it translates into, so it's really spicy and it can create an ulcer. And so that's not going to be good. My taima, the Gemara actually says this, Deminka valuhu lemeina. Because it's going to create a hole in the stomach, or a hole in the intestines, and that obviously is a trefa, and therefore the animal's not kosher. Now, Meisav Rav Shizbi, says, now wait 1 second, I don't understand. How can Shmuel make such a statement like that, when meanwhile, all we have to do is just remember the Mishnah we learned all of 2 minutes ago. Achizas Adam v'amushenes v'shachla herduf nishachla tzoas tarnagolim v'shasa mayim arayim hil'ita tia chiltas u'pilpulin achla samamavis k'shera. So, forgiveness. We're not quoting the Mishnah, we're quoting a Tosefta. The Tosefta is almost word for word like our Mishnah, with a couple of notable exceptions. In this Tosefta, we also added, I'm not going to translate the beginning of the Tosefta, because it is word for word our Mishnah. At the end of the Tosefta, it talks about hil'ita, tia, it eats some sort of grass, some sort of vegetation, chiltas u'pilpulin, or if it ate poison, so such an animal would be kosher. So the Tosefta ends off by saying that animals that do this are kosher. Now, if it was bitten by a snake or if it was bitten by a rabid dog, so this is going to pose a health threat to you, and therefore you can't eat it simply because it's bad for your life. Meaning, it's not kosher, but at the same time, however, it's lethal, and so therefore you can't eat it. Now, what we have in this Tosefta is the following. So kasha chiltus achiltus kasha samamavis asamamavis. So we have steerers between the Tosefta and our Mishnah. or I should say better, the Tosefta against the Mishnah and the Tosefta against Shmuel. Because Shmuel says that the animal who is eating chiltis is a treifa because it will create an ulcer. It's going to create a hole in either the stomach or the intestines. And meanwhile, the Tosefta just simply shrugs its shoulders and says it's not a big deal. And the same thing could be said regarding the samamav, it's a poison. Our Mishnah says that don't eat an animal that consumed poison. And the Tosefta is okay with it. So, chiltis, chiltis, lokasha, kanbal, and kanbekartin. So the Gemara says, well, in terms of making a distinction by chiltis, it depends whether or not the animal ate the leafy portion of the chiltis or the seeds of the chiltis. The leafy portion of the chiltis is spicy, but it's not going to create an ulcer. On the other hand, the carton, the seeds of the chiltis, so that will in fact create an ulcer. That's what Shmuel was describing. That's when Shmuel says that the animal is in fact a treifa. Good. So that's been resolved. Samamavis samamavis lokasha hadida hada adam. Now, when we talk about poison, we have to actually break it down. That which is poisonous to the animal and that which is poisonous to a human. So that which is poisonous to an animal, so that is something where you can eat the animal because it's not going to be poisonous to you. If the animal, however, were to consume something that was poisonous for humans, so then from a treifa standpoint, the animal is not a treifa, but from a health consideration, don't eat that animal because obviously it has poison that would be ill effective to you. Samamav is the behema haino hadufni. Now the Gemara says, now wait 1 second. A poison that's poisonous to an animal, so that is the same thing as hadufni. What the Gemara is bothered by is that in the Tosefta that we quoted, it said both the samamav and it said hadufni, and the Gemara says, I don't understand. Why would the Tosefta be redundant? Tregavni samamavis, the Gemara says, okay, they're just simply two different types. Fine. Continues the Gemara Maitia. Now, one of the things mentioned in the Tosefta, that if an animal consumes it, so the animal is still going to be kosher, is tia. Now, what is that? So Maitia Amar of Yehuda, we're on the top now of Nintesam at Aleph, Ikara de Merisa. It's a really bitter root. Okay, I can't help you any more than that. Rashi describes it as a root of Tura, but I don't know what that means, so whatever. It's an extraordinarily bitter root. And I'd add also spicy, but in any event. I'm Rav Yehuda Haimanda Achotilsa Takli Chiltis Aliba Rekana. If Rav Yehuda now is going to be giving some wonderful medical advice. Again, more medical advice than the Gemara, meaning to say that at the time of the Gemara, this was sound medical advice. Not to say that it wouldn't be nowadays, but we're not sure, we don't know. We don't know exactly what root is being described over here. Okay, in other words, there are a number of variables that don't allow us to follow the Gemara literally when giving us this medical advice. I'm Rav Yehuda, I'm on Dach, Tilsa Tikli Chiltis, if a person were to eat. Tikli is a shekel, and it's a shekel, but it really is a weight. So back in the day, instead of talking about pounds or kilograms, so they used a shekel as a weight. Because remember, back in the day, currency was measured by weight. So, da'achot tilsa tikli chiltis. So if you eat 3 shkalim worth of chiltis, aliba rekana on an empty stomach, mishtalach mashche. So your skin's going to start basically peeling off. So, am Rabbi Abau bididi haya uvda. Now, Rabbi Abau actually describes that he actually did this. I would suggest not on purpose, but in any event. So, and he only ate 1 shekel of chiltis. And then what he did is he ran right into a cool bath of water. So, and if he had not done that, his skin would have just run right off. And it's only because I had the knowledge of the wisdom, the information that we just learned together, so therefore I was able to survive. Meaning if I didn't have the knowledge, so then I wouldn't know what to have done under those circumstances. I'm Rav Yosef Haimanda Achal, Shitzrei Be'ah. If a person were to consume 16 eggs, V'arbei Amguze, followed them by 40 nuts, V'shev Butisa Deparche, and followed by 7 berries, Ushtei Reviyasa Dedovsha, and 2 revios of honey, bitkufas tamus in the hot summer, valiba rekane, all this on an empty stomach, mit aker taya deliba. Literally, the strings of his heart are going to snap, In other words, that kind of diet on an empty stomach is not good for the heart. Har Bar Tivya, the Gemara now talks about a deer. Dasla Beresh Galusa Dave Mafsak Karan. So the hind legs now were cut off. Mafsak Karan Basraisa. So the hind legs of this deer were cut off. Bajka Rab Tzamas Agidim. Now Rav checked the Tzamas Agidim. Tzamas Agidim is basically the crossroads of the sinews that exist along the back leg of the animal. We are going to be discussing them in greater detail approximately 2 weeks from today. But in any event, right, Ayin Vav is where they're discussed in great detail. But in any event, so V'achshirei. So, but just by with the checking of the sinews, so he was machshir this deer. So Savar L'mechel Minei B'umtza. Now, at that point in time, he said, okay, let me eat it. Let me have a good raw piece. Amalei Shmuel L'chai Shmar L'nikurei. So Shmuel says, wait 1 second, not so fast. It may be kosher, but I don't know if it's going to be healthy. Meaning, it could very well be that there is venom running through the animal. You don't know how the animal died. Now, it could be that with the legs that are missing, so it could have been that it was bitten over there by a venomous animal, and this animal could pose as a health risk to you. So don't eat this animal unless you know that it's free of any kind of poison or venom. So Amale Maitakanta. So he asks Shmuel, so what should I do? So Nusve Batanur di Ihu Badik Navshe. Shmuel's response is to put it in an oven, it will check itself. Meaning when you put it in an oven, so the way that the venom and the heat are going to interact is that basically the meat's going to fall apart. Usve, and he throws it into an oven, and nafal tilche, and it actually falls apart. So in fact, Shmuel was right. So although the animal was kosher, it wasn't treif, but at the same time, however, it was riddled with some sort of either venom or poison, and so therefore, it would have been a serious health risk had he eaten it. Kari Shmuel ala de Rav. So Shmuel says regarding Rav, meaning Shmuel was amazed that HaKadosh Baruch Hu interceded on behalf of Rav, lo yuna letzidi kol oven. The Pasuk in Mishlei describes how when a person is a tzaddik, HaKadosh Baruch Hu affords them extra protection. Rav is that tzaddik, and so therefore HaKadosh Baruch Hu would not have allowed Rav to have consumed something that wasn't, there was no kashrus issue, but it was a health issue, and meanwhile HaKadosh Baruch Hu protects Rav. Kari Rav ala de Shmuel, and when as far as Rav's position and perspective on Shmuel was concerned, kol raz lo anas lach, right? All secrets are not withheld from you. Meaning Rav was amazed at Shmuel's knowledge. Shmuel was not only a Talmud Chacham par excellence, but Shmuel also was a doctor. He was he was well versed in all of the sciences of his day. And so therefore, as far as Shmuel was concerned, so this was something that was in his wheelhouse. And Rav was just amazed at the amount of knowledge that Shmuel had amassed. That kind of takes us to the end of our first sugya of the day, and we are now ready to start the next Mishnah. We are now basically, although we are not changing chapters in the Masechta, we're still in the third parak of Chulin, but we are moving topics over here, and we are going to be discussing now for some time Simani Behema. Really exciting and interesting topic coming up in starting with this Mishnah and starting in today's Daf, and that is as follows. Up until now, since Membeis, so we've learned really three Mishnayos together, Lada Gemara, in which what we did is we detailed anatomically the animal and what makes an animal treifa and what does not make an animal a treifa. And since Daf Membeis, that has been our focus from 42 until 59. Okay, some 18 some odd blot of Gemara dedicated to this topic. But now as we start this next Mishnah, so our topic of discussion is going to be the identification of animals which are kosher, which are not kosher. The first place to look to on this topic is of course the Torah Kedosha. The Torah in two places, in Parsha Shmini and Parsha Sereh, outlines and delineates what is going to be a kosher animal versus what's not going to be a kosher animal. Let me just give a quick introduction into the Mishnah. Perhaps you remember biology of your formative years, high school and college, and or college. And so if you remember, so they had the animals classified and categorized into all the different species and subspecies. you'll forgive me for saying this, but it's a little bit mind-numbing in terms of all the different categorizations of the animals. When it comes to the Torah gives very easy categorization of the animals. It basically breaks down into four categories. There's behem and chaya, basically those large animals that walk on four. There's ofos, or birds. There are dagim, they're fish. And shratzim, and anything that crawls low to the ground or walks low to the ground. That's it. Those are your categorization of the animals. And so what we're going to be doing is that within each one of the four categories, there exists kosher and non-kosher animals in all four of those categories. So if you want to eat a large animal, so simani kashrus. Same thing with birds, same thing with fish, and same thing with the shratzim, the small things that run low to the ground. In terms of now identification, first of all, just as a point of interest, and it's important also, the Rambam counts this as one of the mitzvahs of the Torah. The Rambam counts of one of the 613 mitzvahs, the proper identification of a kosher animal. So if we know and understand what it means for to be a kosher animal, and we properly identify, we are fulfilling one of the mitzvahs of the Torah. Good. It's not just to avoid eating not kosher. The Rambam actually counts this as a mitzvah essay. In terms of identification, so from the Torah's perspective, meaning we didn't start the Mishnah yet, right? I'd even say, don't look at the Mishnah yet. If just from the Torah's perspective, so when it comes to the animals, behem and chaya, so the Torah gives us characteristics, the character traits of a kosher and non-kosher animal. As we all know, the Torah says, it's the 11th parak of Vayikra, I think the 14th parak of Devarim. I could be wrong about that. But but certainly the 11th parak of Vayikra. So, 14th parak of Devarim. Okay, good. So in terms of the behem and chaya, so the Torah gives its characteristics, we all know. So it has to be malagera, and it has to be mafresis parsa. It has to chew its cud, and it has to have split hoofs. More of that coming up in the course of today's daf. And that's true for both behema and for chaya. By the way, just for better understanding, behema are what we would describe as domesticated animals. Basically, those animals that you can pen and keep around on your farm. They're not going to go free. They're not going to run wild. They're eligible for karbanos. Not all of them, but many of them are eligible for karbanos. That's the behema. Chaya, those are the wild animals. So. Right, deer, antelope, gazelle, ibex. We're going to be discussing many of the wild animals in the course of today's daf. So they too, as long as they exhibit the simani kashrus, so they are in fact going to be kosher. They're not that popular in the markets. I guess the market itself is not that thrilled with them, but nevertheless, a number of them are in fact kosher. That's by behem and chaya. Ofos, from the Torah's perspective. The Torah does not give us simanim. The Torah does not give us characteristics in terms of which birds to eat, which birds not to eat. What does the Torah do? So again, you look at these two places in the Torah, Parshas Shmini and Parshas Re'eh. So the Torah actually identifies 24 birds that are not kosher. In the course of the upcoming Dapim of Gemara, what we're going to be learning together is that actually do a comparison of the list of 24 in Parshas Shmini and the list of 24 in Parshas Re'eh. It's not a perfect match. And so to that, what I'll say is just simply wait, because the Gemara is going to be addressing that question a little bit later on in this parak. Okay, good. But again, let's just stick with the Torah. As far as fish are concerned, the Torah gives us simonim. The Torah gives us characteristics. And that is fins and scales, more of that to be discussed coming up. And then shratzim. And then the animals that are low to the ground. So as far as animals are low to the ground, so here, the Torah more gives us the proper name of those that are kosher. Four different types of grasshoppers are kosher. The four are actually identified in the Torah itself. And the rest of the shratzim population are, of course, not kosher. Okay. That is all from the perspective of the Torah. Now, here's what we're going to be learning together as we start now the Mishnah and basically the second half of the third parak of Chulin. We're going to be learning that although the Torah only gives characteristics regarding the animals and the fish, however, what the Chachamim did is they looked at the birds and they looked at the grasshoppers and they gave characteristics. Meaning they basically looked at all 24. We're going to be discussing this in much greater detail, not in today's daf, not in tomorrow's daf, but Sunday morning. We're going to be doing this in much greater detail. The Torah looked at the prototype predatory bird mentioned in the Torah. We're actually going to identify a couple of days from now what is the prototype, but the prototype non-kosher bird. And what the Chachamim basically did is they drew what are the characteristics of such a bird that would identify it as not being kosher. And so the Torah does not give simanim regarding the bird, but the Chachamim do. And then, of course, the big question, which the Gemara doesn't even ask, but it is the big question, is that once we have the simanim given by the Chachamim, so can we now then identify kosher and not kosher birds using the simanim, using the characteristics? Okay, that's a big question. It's a little bit open-ended, but it's a big and important question. Okay, that is all by way of introduction. Let's start the Mishnah inside. The Mishnah begins, Simanim behema v'chaya nemru min haTorah. Okay, so the Mishnah tells us, as far as characteristics are concerned regarding behema and chaya, look in the Torah. Simanim ha'oflo nemru. Now, the birds, Torah does not mention. Aval amru chachamim, but the chachamim did. And so for the birds, what is it called? Of hadores tamei. So if it is now I'm going to use a very loose term over here. I'm going to be describing it as a predatory bird. Now, what does that mean exactly, predatory bird? It's not clear. Take a look at Rashi right here in our Mishnah. Rashi writes regarding hadores, ha'ochiz b'tziponavu magbiya minakarka masha ochel. It claws its prey, picking it up off the ground and eating it. That's Rashi's description over here. More on this topic, you can see Tosfos, not in today's daf. Tosfos is on Samach Aleph, where Tosfos takes to task Rashi's pshat. Tosfos gives a pshat in the name of Rabbeinu Tam. See a Tosfos on Samach Aleph for more discussion on Dores. For our purposes in the daf right now, I'm just simply going to say predatory. Kol ha'dores tamei. If it's a predatory bird, it's tamei. Kol sheish lo etzba yaseira. Now, on the other hand, if it has an extra digit. Now, again, the Mishnah is not clear what that means by the extra digit. Rashi over here describes that not on the front of its leg, on the back of the leg, it's got a protrusion, a finger protrusion going off on the back of the leg. That's Rashi's description. The Rambam describes it as an extra protrusion, as one of its fingers being longer than the other. Okay, on page 84 of Rabbi Lack Sefer, if you want to see the bird, its legs, its etzba yasera, you could see it on page 84. Kol sheish lo etzba yasera, v'zefek, it's got to have a crop. The crop is the first pouch of its digestive tract. Food goes down the esophagus. The first pouch it goes into is a zefek. It's a crop. There is not digestion happening in there. It's just simply a holding place for the food. And then what's going to happen is that food is going to go run down further digestive tube. And then it's going to go into the korkovon. And then it's going to go into the gizzard, what we would describe as a stomach. The korkovon niklaf. And also, as far as the korkovon, as far as the gizzard is concerned, it has to be peeled. So, if it's not a predatory bird, and it has the extra finger, and it has the zefik, it has the crop, and its korkovon can be peeled, so these are the simanim, these are the characteristics of a kosher bird. Rabbi Lazar, Rabbi Tzedek, Amar Kol Ofa, Cholek, Es Raglav, Tamei. Now, if you see that its feet are divided, it's going to be Tamei. Now, presumably what that means is that if you see the bird resting on a branch, and what happens is that it takes its four digits, its four quote-unquote fingers, or let's call them toes, whatever the case, and it balances, in other words, it puts two in the front and two in the back. So according to Rebbe Lazar, Rebbe Tzedek of our Mishnah, that's a siman tamei. It's a correct characteristic of a non-kosher bird. Uvechagavim kol sheish lo arba raglaim. Now, when it comes to grasshoppers, so what are we looking for in grasshoppers? We no longer have a mesorah in terms of which grasshoppers are kosher and which are not. Right? Well reported that the Taimanim still maintain a mesorah in terms of which grasshoppers are kosher, which are not. And to us, really, all this becomes academic because no interest, people are not interested in it. But there are grasshoppers which are kosher. And the Mishnah now is going to be giving us the characteristics. Kosher yesh lo arba raglaim, if it has four legs, v'arba kanafayim, four wings, v'kartzulim, and jumping legs. There's a really interesting Rashi over here describing how these jumping legs are in the front. We, of course, know, I'm looking at a grasshopper right now, page 85. The jumping legs are not in the front, they're in the back. Anyway, much discussed Rashi regarding the jumping legs of the grasshoppers. And the wings are covering the majority of their body. Grasshoppers that are presented in front of me right now, page 85. The wings are covering the majority of their body. Rabbi Yossi Omer v'shmo Chagav. Now Rabbi Yossi adds that it also has to have the name Chagav. People have to be calling it Chagav. Now when it comes to a fish, so it has to have snapir v'kaskeses. So that means to say fins and scales. Kaskeses, by the way, the word actually scales, it's like the armor worn in the good old days. So it was scales in nature. Rabbi Yehuda Amar Shnei Kaskesim v'snapir Echad. And according to Rabbi Yehuda, it is minimum two scales on the body and only one fin required. The kaskesim are the ones that are attached to it, and the snapirim is what allows the fish to literally fly, but fly over here, meaning it glides through the water. Okay, and that is the starting point now of the discussion of identification of kosher and non-kosher animals, but the discussion only just begun. We start...
It's not right.
That's not mentioned in the Mishnah, but that is an interesting point. But it's not mentioned in the Mishnah. Tanu Rabbanan, we start with the Gemara, and the Gemara starts its discussion with a brisa. Eloin simani behema kol behema marfesis parsa kol behema shemala gera biyadu she'ein la shinayim lamala utahora. Now the way the brisa is presented to us, basically, now here's what we can do. We can work with the following piece of information. Any animal that chews its cud, so you know it doesn't have upper teeth. And you could do this. In fact, I did. You can go out to the farm and take a look at any ruminating animal. And what you could do is you can insert your finger into the mouth. I did.
Wow.
So, yeah, it's okay. It's okay. I had Dr. Berman with me, so it made it much easier. He knows what he's talking about. And you'll find that there are no teeth on the upper portion of the animal. No front incisors, upper incisors of a ruminating animal. And again, physiologically, why is that? It's very simple. Because its diet is consisting of grass. And all it needs to do is just simply pluck the grass out of the ground. It only needs bottom incisors to do that. It's not chewing its food. It's just simply plucking the grass out of the ground, and then what does it do? So we discussed this already time and again. Let's say it over quickly. Then sends the food over right into the keras. It goes right into the rumen, and what it does is over there, it sits there, and it digests just a little bit. There is some digestion going on in the rumen, thanks to my good friend Rabbi Lack. I learned a little bit more about the digestion that occurs in the rumen. There is some digestion that occurs over there. And then what happens is the animal sends it back through the esophagus up to the mouth. And there it is, malagera. It brings up the cud. And what it's going to do now is it's going to chew on its what's a good description of it? It's basically like, it's right?
It's a mesh.
Good. So they're going to chew on that mesh. And then they're going to send it down, and this process continues again and again. And then eventually, when it's soft enough, when it's digestible, so then what it's going to do is it's then going to send it through stomachs 2 and 3, eventually into stomach number 4. We've gone through this before. The point is that we are not going to be seeing upper incisors of a ruminating animal. So the way the Braisa says it, however, is slightly misleading, and the Gemara is going to correct it. Kol behem, I'm just rereading the last two lines. So, if you do not see the upper incisors, if it chews its cud, so you know it doesn't have upper incisors, and therefore the animal is going to be kosher. Uklaluhu, now the Gemara says, is that the rule? Meaning, is that the way we're going to work it? Now we know the animal chews its cud. And it does not have upper incisors. And we also know that the camel, of course, is not kosher. The Torah in both Parshios, in Shmini and in Re'eh, tells us that there are four exceptions to the rule. Now, when I say exceptions, they're not really exceptions, meaning you need both, split hooves and chewing its cud. The camel does not have split hooves. Now, there is a little bit of a split,
at the end of the hoof of a camel, but it's not split through and through. So it does not have split hooves, and it does chew its cud. Now, what about its teeth? Now, the Gemara here tells us, and it does not have the upper incisors. So the Gemara says, Gamal Nivi Islay. The Gemara says it doesn't have upper incisors, but it doesn't, in fact, have canines. If you want to see the canine of the teeth, so once again, so great picture over here. Just turn the page, page 86, and you're going to see the canines of the camel. So the Gemara says, Vare Ben Gamal Denivi Namin Leisle. The Gemara says, okay, but the Ben Gamal, a young developing camel, does not even have these canines. Now, what about our Shafan and our Nevis? Now, here, how do they translate? So, if you open up a trusty Artsul Chumash, so you're going to see Shafan and our Nevis translate into Shafan and our Nevis. Meaning, once again, we're not totally sure exactly how they translate into. So, we generally translate them as some form of rabbit or hare, and it may or may not be correct in terms of what they are. But however, they are two animals that the Torah identifies as chewing its cud, and meanwhile, it does not have split hooves, it's not kosher. And meanwhile, they do have shinaim lamala, they do have upper incisors. Va'ot shinaim iksiveid ba'araisa. And on top of all that, you know, teeth are not mentioned in the Torah. The Torah talks about the chewing of its cud, the bringing up its cud. And the Torah talks about the split hooves. Teeth are not mentioned in the Torah. So what are you giving me a rule about teeth when it's not mentioned in the Torah? Ela hachi kamar. So the Gemara says, okay, here's what we're going to need to do. We're going to just simply flip around the rule, and here's how it works. Kol behema she'en la shinaim lamala biyadu she'imala gerim afresis parsa v'tahora. There we go. So now what we're going to basically say is as follows. We know the characteristics because the Torah tells us. Has to have split hooves and has to chew its cud. Now, on top of that, we're going to add now another layer, which is that if it doesn't have upper incisors, now we know that it doesn't have upper incisors. It does, in fact, chew its cud. And therefore, it's going to be kosher. So in other words, it's the dental makeup of the animal, which allows us now to know that it in fact chews its cud and it has split hooves, and therefore it's going to be kosher. So the Gemara says, "V'livdok b'farsasah." So the Gemara says, "Why don't you just check the feet?" So kigon shayipusas chatuchos. So the Gemara says, "Well, what if there's a circumstance where the feet are cut off and you just simply can't see the feet?" Uched Rav Chista, Damar Rav Chista, Hayamahalch beMidbar. You're walking in the desert of Masa Behemah shaparsasah chatuchos, and you see that the feet are cut off. Bodek b'fiha. So now, how am I going to examine the animal to see if it's kosher or not? Check the mouth. If it doesn't have the upper incisors, so now I know that the animal is in fact kosher. Now again, the Torah doesn't give us that characteristic, but we know that ruminating animals don't have upper incisors. So the lack of upper incisors now are positive identification that the animal is a ruminating animal, and therefore kosher. So the Gemara says, but you have to know, however, that there's one exception. So the only other piece of information you need two pieces of information if you don't have the hoofs. You need to see a lack of upper incisors, and you have to say that this is not a camel. Once you have those two pieces of information, you now know that this animal is a kosher animal. The Gemara says, now gamal nivei islay. Now the Gemara says, now camels have canine teeth. Ela vavashi akir ben gamal. The Gemara says, fine. But the young camel doesn't have this canine teeth, so you have to be able to positively identify that this is not a camel. So, lack of incisors tell me it's malagera. It's kosher. The only other thing you have to know is it's not a camel. Lava mart hecha ika ben gamal, ika nami min achrina, dedamila ben gamal. There's no other species that lack upper incisors. So the Gemara says, that's right. There's no other species. Lo sakadacha, didni Rabbi Yishmael, veta gamal ki malagera hi, shalib alama yadeh she'en lecha davar malagera, vetame ela gamal. The Kadosh Baruch Hu, shalib alamo. So he is the creator of the world. He is the author of the Torah. He is the one who's going to tell us this is it. This is the only exception where it is a malagera and it's not kosher. There is not going to be any other animal. Now, mind you, by the way, the Shafan and the Arneves are malagera, but no one's going to confuse a large animal with a Shafan and Arneves. Lefichach par ba'al kasav hu, and that's why the Torah says the word hu. So let's say you come across an animal where its mouth is mutilated. So I cannot look at the dentistry of this animal. So bodik bit parsasas, so look at the hoofs. In parsasas, the dukas biadushi tara. If the hooves are split, you know it's a kosher animal. Imla biadushi tamea. Uvavashi akir chazir. Again, the only thing you have to do is you just have to rule out that it's not a pig. Because the pig have split hooves, then it's not kosher. It's the only exception. Now, the Gemara question challenges that for a moment. Lava mardika chazir, kenami min achrina. Didamyat lechazir. Maybe there are other animals. So the Gemara says, lo sakadach. The Gemara says, nothing doing. Ditan debe Rabbi Shmuel, because we learned in the Braisa. Vesa chazir kemafis parsahu. This is it. This is the only animal that has split hooves that's not kosher. The Torah says the word who. This is the only animal. So let's say you're in the desert, says Rav Chista, and the mouth is mutilated, so I cannot see the teeth of the animal. And so therefore, that's not going to be the telltale sign. But the hooves are split. So what you could do is the following. We're going to have one more check for Rav Chista. And that's going to be its muscle, and that is the mahalach shesivayer biadushi tar v'yamla biadushi tameya. At a point in a kosher animal, there's going to be a connection of the muscle to the bone of the animal, both horizontal and vertical connections, and therefore it can peel off both vertically and horizontally. Uvevashi akir arod, with the only exception being the mule. The lava mart ika arodika nami min achrina de damil arod. What is there? No other species that has this characteristic where its muscle is going to be peeling off both vertically and horizontally. So the Gemara says gemir deleka. We have a tradition that no, that's not the case. Ve'echabo deg. Now where exactly you check? Amar Rabbi v'temer of chista bechanfei ha'ukitz. You check at the rump of the animal where you have this connection. We have just learned together in the last half an amud of Gemara that when it comes to kosher animals, so basically, if you can identify either it's malagera, which is characteristic of an animal not having upper incisors, or if it's mafris parsa or if it has split hooves, it's going to be a kosher animal. All you have to know is the exceptions of the Torah and be able to positively identify that these are not one of the exceptions, and you are good to go. And the Gemara gave us like a bonus round, if you will, at the end regarding the muscle configuration of the rump of a kosher animal. Now, where does this come from? Doesn't come from the Torah. So the Gemara obviously has some sort of tradition. How far back does the tradition go? I can only guess. I don't know. But it's not min haTorah, but the Gemara has such a tradition. Can we rely on the simonim nowadays? So the poskim have a debate on that very issue. Simoni Chaya, the Gemara now turns to its attention to the Chaya. Now, as I mentioned in the intro to this Mishnah, so Behem and Chaya are really one category, but it could be broken down into two, where the behemoth is the domesticated animals and the chaya are, quote-unquote, the wild animals. Tanu Rabbanan Elohein Simani Chaya. So the Gemara quotes a braisa, a tosef, to giving us the simanim of the chaya. To which the Gemara says, simanim of the chaya, it's the same as behemoth. So chaya b'chla behemoth hili simanim. So Amar Rabbi Zera, so as we turn now to the top of Nintesimut Beis, lahatir chelba. No. What we're looking for is the following. We know that in terms of a kosher sign of a chaya, it's the same as behema. Malagera, mafris parsa. What we're looking for over here is be able to identify and differentiate between a behema and chaya because there's a basic halachic difference between the two. There actually are two basic halachic differences, but we're going to be focusing on one, and that is the consumption of its chalev. By a behema, we cannot eat its chalev. Its chalev is asur. Aser with the punishment of kares, and when a chaya, the chalev is going to be mutter. The same fat, the same hard fats of a chaya are in fact permissible. And so, how do we know what? How do we differentiate between a behema and a chaya? What are the telltale signs of differentiation? We've gone over, it's not coming up in today's daf, but we've gone over many times that there's an animal that the chachamim were totally confused by. Because it's laid somewhere categorically between a behema and chaya, and that is a koi. But in the meantime, however, what is the telltale sign of differentiation? V'hachi kamar elin siman chaya shechel ba muter kosher yesh lo karnayim utalafim. If it has horns and hooves, so it is in fact going to be a chaya. If you see the horns, you don't even have to look at the hooves. But if you see the hooves, you still have to find the horns. The keresh. Now keresh, it seems to be some form of an antelope. It only has one horn, mutter. Now one horn animals, I know what everybody's thinking. At least I think I know what everyone's thinking. So stay tuned. That's coming up a little bit later on. Okay, wait. Okay, I hear you, but the Gemara is going to discuss it in more in greater detail. Shoshein lo ala karnachas mutar. So kolu vare eze ish lo karnaim uslofim v'chabo asa. And the Gemara says, now you take a look at a goat, and a goat has got horns and it's got hooves, and it's a goat, meaning it's a behema. It's chelev is asa. So what are you telling me that the horns are going to be the telltale sign of a chaya versus a behema? It's not true. So the Gemara says, okay, we need a more details in the description. So the Gemara over here describes kruchos be'inan. So the Gemara says that...
wild goats, those that climb on the rocky...
Okay, wait. Let's first get through the Gemara's definitions. So the Gemara says kruchos be'inan, they have to be layered. The horns have to be layered. So the Gemara says, v'arei shur de kruchos v'chabasar. So the Gemara says, okay, and if you look at the horns of an ox, you're going to see this layered pattern. Charukos be'inan. So the Gemara describes something along like notches, like ridges. So the Gemara says, "Vare eiz de charukos vechabo aser." Okay, I go back to the horns of a goat, and it's got these ridges, and meanwhile the chelv is going to be aser. Mifutsalos be'inan. So the Gemara says they have to be forked. They have to spread out in various directions. Vehari tzvi de ein mifutsalos vechabo muter. Now the Gemara over here describes a tzvi, and its horns are not forked in all different directions. Once again, if you'd like some nice pictures of deer, antelope, gazelle, ibex, turn the page 88 of Rabbi Lack Sefer, and you're going to see various horns of these animals. Rashi over here, when the Gemara we just described is being a tzvi, so Rashi says it's not a deer. It's not a deer, says Rashi. So Rashi describes it... What we call a tzvi, meaning in modern Hebrew, and I say modern Hebrew, I'm even going back 800 years. So a tzvi is generally described as a deer, but Rashi says that's not what the Gemara is describing. The Gemara is describing, Rashi says, a Steinbeck, what we would call an ibex. So right on the top of the page, right, beautiful horns. So and it's not spreading out in all different directions. The horns are nice and organized, two horns. So v'chelba mutter, and meanwhile the chel of it is mutter. So the Gemara says, chaduros be'inan. The horns have to be rounded in nature and not a rectangular or a square shape. Hilkach. And the Gemara says, now, if all this has been confusing, it's fine. So the Gemara now gathers itself. Hecha de miftzala lo dina v'lo dina. Look, if now the horns are spreading out in all different directions, so the Gemara says at that point in time, look no further. It is a chaya. You have positively identified a chaya. And so therefore the chelev is going to be mutter. Hecha de lo miftzala. Now if the horns are not shooting out in all different directions, so be'inan. So now you need kruchos, chaduros, charukos. So now they have to be rounded, ridged, rounded, layered, and they have to have notches in them. Okay. V'hu de mivle. And they also have to have some sort of alignment to them. And the Gemara says, and look, the Ize Karkuz, some sort of goat that existed at the time of the Gemara. So the Gemara says, look, it categorically doesn't fit in very well to any one of the descriptions. Its horns are not spraying out all over the place. And in the description that we just gave, this Ize Karkuz doesn't fit in well to that description. And the Chachamim were unsure whether or not it falls under the category of a Chaya or that of a Behema. Hahi Ize Karkuz Ave Beresh Kalusa, the Akar Malait Sina de Tarba Mina. So there was this Ize Karkuz that was in the house of the Resh Kalusa, Shechta the animal, and they collected its fat, its chalev, and they put it in the basket. And Tzina de Tarva Mina, Rav Achai Aser. So Rav Achai says he can't eat it, meaning we are unsure as to whether or not this falls under the category of Chayer Behema. Chelav of behemah is aser, chelav of vechai is mutter, but we're just simply unsure categorically where this animal belongs, where this wild goat belongs, and so therefore Rav Achai says, we don't eat its fat. Rav Shmuel bereid Rabbi Abahu, achal minei. And Rav Shmuel bereid Rabbi Abahu says, no, we do eat its fat. And I'll add, it's delicious. Sorry, editor's note. So and he ate from it. Karyanav shei mi pri piish tispa bitno. Quoting another pasuk from Mishlei, the pasuk says that the fruits piish of the mouth of a man. So male bitno. I'm sorry, tispa bitno. It fills my stomach. And the way Rashi understands his understanding of the pasuk of Mishlei, because I have a mesorah, I learned from my Rebbe that such a goat is in fact a chai and not a behemah, so based on the information, knowledge I know, so therefore, it's mutter. I fully believe that it's mutter. And the Gemara says that in fact, that's the psak. The psak is that this particular wild goat, whatever it is, but the Gemara says that we're going to be mekel like Rav Shmuel. However, caution. He's haru b'Rabbeinu Achai shemer eini golahu. But be cautious of Rabbeinu Achai, who we know is machmir. Now, what exactly is this caution that the Gemara just gave out? So the way Rashi understands it, I'll read the Rashi inside. He's haru b'Rabbeinu Achai lina gabo kavod v'ladun lefanav kehalacha ad sheyachzer bo v'lo latir b'fanav mashu oser shemer eini golahu. Look. Be respectful of Rav Achai. Rav Achai is the mayor of Gola. He enlightens the diaspora. He is the posek of the diaspora. Interesting, by the way, that he is the mayor of Gola and we don't follow his halacha. Okay, that in of itself is interesting. But in other words, the caution over here, as Rashi explains it, is look, don't paskin the halacha right in front of him. Meaning the halacha is that we're going to be mekel by this wild goat. It is the chaya. The chelav of it is mutter. But when Rav Achai is around, do not say in front of him that it's mutter. In other words, take his kavod in consideration. Right. Exactly. Bekarasaf apishen lo ker nachar mutter. We are now giving a description of the keres, however it's pronounced, in that it has one horn. Am Rav Yehuda keres tavya debei ilah. So this keres is tavya debei ilah. It is the deer of Be'ilah, some geographic location. The Tigras, Arya de Be'ilah. So the Tigras, some sort of lion, is the, Rashi is unclear in terms of what exactly it is, but Arya de Be'ilah is some sort of lion. Amrav kahana teisha amasa have bein una le'una. And now, get into a little bit of discussion of fantastic animals. Fantastic meaning we have not seen them. Okay, fine. We haven't seen them. So but the Gemara describes now, these kinds of wild animals. These very specific animals. Rav Kahana describes that there are 9 amos, which is somewhere in the ballpark of 15 feet that exist bein una luna from one ear to the other ear. So you're talking about just the head and the distance between its ears as being 15 feet. Okay, so obviously, if we were to take the Gemara literally over here, we are discussing a giant creature. Da'arya debe'ilah. Amar Rav Yosef Shitzar Amasa Havi Mashchei. Its length is 16 amos. De'tavya debe'ilah of this deer, of this particular deer. Amar Le'kesel Rav Yeshua Ben Chananya Elokeichem Ka'aryeh Matil. And now we get into a little bit of dialogue and discussion between the Caesar and Rabbi Yeshua ben Chananya. You know, Elokechem, you know your gods, Ka'aryeh Matil. In terms of the Mashalim, in terms of the parables of the Torah, it's compared to like a lion. Dichsiv, we quote a pasuk from Amos. Aryeh Sha'ag Milo Yira. If the lion is roaring, so who's not going to be afraid? Meaning, and obviously as a nevuah, this is a Mashal Takarash Baruch Hu, meaning we should have proper Yira, proper fear of a Karash Baruch Hu. So my Rebusa, so the Gemara says, so now the Caesar says to Rabbi Yeshua ben Chananya, I'm simply unimpressed. That's your great God. He's compared to a lion. So Parsha Katal Aryeh. So in other words, you get a good horseman, and the horsemen go and they go hunting, and they kill a lion. So your great God is this lion. So Amarle Lav Kahay Aryeh Matil. So Rav Kahana says, I'm sorry, Rabbi Yeshua ben Chananya says to the Caesar, not a regular lion. We're not talking about just any kind of lion, but rather Karyeh de Be'ilah. We're talking about this fantastic lion that we just described a moment earlier. Matil, that is what God is compared to. Amarle Be'ina de Mechzele Niali. So Rav Yeshua ben Chananya, I'm sorry, the Caesar says to Rav Yeshua ben Chananya, let me see this animal, right? Like, what are you talking about? Never heard about this animal. I never seen this animal before. Like, I like to see the animal. Amalei lamatzis chazislai. So Rav Yeshua ben Chananya says, I can't produce the animal for you. The animal outlives out in that geographic location, and I can't get it, and even if I could get it, you don't want to see it. So Amalei ivra chazinalei. And the Caesar was insistent. I want to see this animal. By rachame it ake meduchte. So Rav Yeshua ben Chananya davens to Kadosh Baruch Hu, and the animal now starts making its way from its location in order to meet the Caesar. Kihave marchik arba me aparsa, and now it's 400 parsas away. That is a great distance. And niham chad kala, and it roared just one time. Afilu kol ma'avrata vishura deruma nafa. And what happened is that that roar at a distance of 400 parsa caused both miscarriages and walls to fall down in Rome. Ademircha klas mea parsa, now it's getting closer. This animal's 300 parsas away. Niem kala achrina roared once again. Natar kache vishine degavre. Teeth fell out of people's mouths as a result of that. Vafhu nafal mikurse lara. And even Caesar himself fell from his throne to the ground. Amarle. And now Caesar got the point. Ben Matusa Minach, he begs and pleads with Rabbi Yeshua ben Chananya. By Rachme Allah de la Hadala Duchte, please daven that it goes back to its place. By Rachme Allah Vahadala Asre, Rabbi Yeshua ben Chananya davens, and it in fact returns back to its makom. I'm like, Kesel Rabbi Yeshua ben Chananya, be'ina de'echse lelokeichu. Again, more dialogue between the Caesar and Rabbi Yeshua ben Karchi. He says, I want to see your God. Amalei lamatzis chazislei. And he says, you can't see the God. Now, it's interesting, by the way, because there's a pasuk in the Torah, lo yirani adam v'chai. A person cannot see a Kadosh Baruch Hu and live. Why didn't Rav Yeshua ben Chananya just simply quote the pasuk? But anyway, he says he can't. The Amalei ivra chazinalei, as we now turn to the top of Samach Amad Aleph. And once again, the Caesar insistent on he wants to see a Kadosh Baruch Hu. Azul kumna lahadayuma, bitkufas tamas. And so now, what Rabbi Yeshua ben Chananya does is he takes Caesar out in the dead of summer, and he right up to the sun. Amalei istakel bei, and he says, here, why don't you try the following? Look directly into the hot summer sun. Amalei istakel bei, amalei lamatina. He says, I can't do that. Amalei yuma. If you cannot even look at one of the ministers of a Kadosh Baruch Hu, the son is just simply but an attendant, a servant to a Kadosh Baruch Hu. If you can't even look at the son, how can you possibly expect to look at a Kadosh Baruch Hu? I'm the case of Rabbi Shub and Chananya Be'ina, the Itzvah Slei, Naham Elelokaichu. So he says, I want to make a se'uda for your God. So Amar Lamatisa, and Rav Yeshua ben Chananya says to the Caesar, you can't do it. Amai nefisha chavasai. Because he's got so many legions, you're simply not able to provide enough, not even for the legions of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Amar Ivra, and again, the Caesar's insistent. Amar poksvis legida derivisa deriviche ama. So he says, okay, you know what? So if we're gonna make a suda, so first of all, we're gonna need a wide area. The Agadata over here, it's so powerful. It's so revelatory. So anyway, so we're gonna need a riverbank because it's a wide area. So Tarach Shisa Yarche Kaita. For the six months of the summer, so they're preparing the suda, Asa Zika. Kanash and Kanshe, Lema Tarach Shis. I'm sorry, in Kanshe. So along comes a great wind, right? I guess here in Florida we would describe them as the hurricane after the summers, and blew away everything. Lema tarich shisa yarchid esitva. So, and then he prepared another 6 months during the winter. Asamitra in tave biyama. And then along comes the rain and drowns it in the pouring rain. Amrle mai hai. And the Caesar says to Rav Yishuv ben Chananya, what is going on over here? Amrle hani kenushayu zuluche de asukame. These are just the sweepers and the washers that go in front of a Kadosh Baruch Hu. Meaning, you couldn't even provide a seuda for the custodial service of a Kadosh Baruch Hu. Amrle yahachi lamatzina, and once again, now Caesar has learned his third lesson of the day regarding the inability to quote unquote feed a Kadosh Baruch Hu and provide for a Kadosh Baruch Hu. Okay, let's quickly recap. I know I went into a little bit into tomorrow's daf, which is unusual, but okay, I know. But let's recap. We talked about general conditions of an animal that do not render it a treifa, but caution says the Mishnah and the Gemara that if the animal ingested anything which is harmful to you, human, so obviously you cannot eat that animal. The animal is not treif, but it's a kind of nefashos. We then turn our attention to the Mishnah and Tesam and Aleph, and here now we are turning to section 2 of the third parak of Chulin, which is kashrus identification. And even though the Torah does not give simonim characteristics for all four different types of animals, but the Chachamim do in fact give simonim characteristic traits. And in the course of today's daf, we learned the various characteristic traits of the behemah and chayas, which are in the Torah, ofos, which are not in the Torah, but the Chachamim give, the fish, that those characteristic traits are in the Torah, and that of grasshoppers. So the Torah only gives us the names of four different grasshoppers, but the Chachamim give characteristic traits to identify the kosher grasshoppers. We talked today about other ways of identifying kosher animals, the teeth, and the dental structure of kosher animals are unique in nature, and therefore they don't have the upper incisors, and therefore that's going to be a way of identifying. But what I just did is I oversimplified in reviewing. We also learned that all kosher animals have split hooves, with exception to the pig. So as long as you see the hooves and you don't see the and you know it's not a pig, that also is a way of identification. Also, how do I differentiate between a behemah and chaya? I don't eat the chelav. I cannot eat the chelav of a behemah, but I'm allowed to eat the chelav of a chaya. How do I make a differentiation? So the simple answer is the horns, but that's a simple answer. You need to see either the horns spreading out, splaying out, or you need to see various grooves and shapes within the horns, as we learned in today's daf. Furthermore, we talked about some fantastic animals and creatures, and we went into some philosophical discussions that took place between Rabbi Yeshua ben Chananya and the Caesar.